We're going to get started here. Come on, man. Are you?
Oh, hey, Ben.
I thought you were ready.
I am ready. I'm just going on an hour bike ride. Just got off the bike, and I'm using this thing called a Theragun. You know I use these things, don't you?
I've seen. Yeah, I know you use that. You know?
I was thinking, I use it a lot, and I was thinking maybe if somebody from the Theragun company saw me doing this on the air live, that they would let me sponsor them.
Maybe throw you a bone or something.
Yeah, throw me a bone. I'd love to be a sponsor. I don't think that'll happen, but I do like my Theragun.
No, I think the Theraguns are awesome.
Different attachments, too.
Actually,
I love it.
In your muscle and longevity episode with Dr. Osborne, that was a big part of it, wasn't it? Why aren't they big on doing Theragun before like working out?
He does. You know, he does powerlifting, and they do Theragun for almost 30 minutes before the workout. So
that's wild.
You know, but yeah, it's pretty cool. I've used one for years and I love it.
That's super cool. Well, huge shout out to Dr. Osborne. We're going to get him back on the show here very soon. So guys, stay tuned for that. Doc, was your day good? Before we go into questions, how was your day? Good?
I had a great day. Yeah. You know, it was a beautiful day. Took a great walk at lunch and then got straight on my bike after work and rode for about 12 miles. So.
Not bad.
Had a great little ride.
Not bad. So you're ready to answer some questions tonight.
That's why I look kind of rough. I just got off the bike. But, I am. I'm ready. I hope I know the answer. But.
All right. Sherry, what's going on? Great to see you. If you guys have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get started here. It's actually been kind of a theme recently with hormones and when is it too late? Question is it too late for an 86-year-old female to check hormone levels and then do anything about them, assuming that they would be low? Super common question. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm cool with it. You know, I did pellets on a 92-year-old pharmacist male not long ago and new to testosterone. So, yeah, I don't see anything wrong at all with it. I mean, you know, obviously it's better if you start earlier to prevent bone loss and some of those things that it helps. But, you know, if she's a healthy 86-year-old, you know, assuming things go right for her, and she should live till, you know, well over 100 years old. So, yeah, I think there's advantages. I'm not going to overdose anybody of any age with hormones, but yeah, certainly it would be fine. You know, no problem.
This is probably an ignorant question, but you know, the question kind of suggests that hormones can be assumed that they're low at that age. Is there still a reason to check hormone levels, or could you just start them on some sort of therapy?
Yeah, well, I always check before I start. I mean, you know, for some reason, they may be, you know, she may have an elevated testosterone level. She may be aromatizing a little bit. But, you know, just hard to say. I like to get a baseline because I like to follow it, you know, after they've been on the hormones for a couple months. So, and I get them anyway on the Cleveland. So I'm going to, they come on there anyway. So why not look at them and see where they are? I mean, some people still produce hormones later in life to a certain extent. Through adrenals, through their own fat cells. So there's a lot of variation. They're probably very low though.
All right. And this is, I see Coal Miner's Daughter. So welcome in Coal Miner's Daughter over there on YouTube. Let's go to, this is kind of a follow-up question from the same person. Any other suggestions for a very active / healthy, no meds, energetic 86-year-old female to check if having lower energy than usual? So it seems that this is a bit out of the ordinary for them. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, definitely get a Cleveland panel just to make sure the vitamin levels are okay. You know, look at sleep patterns, nutrition, exercise habits, stress levels, cortisol levels. You know, you can check all that through a Cleveland heart panel. So suggestions may come after that, assuming that nothing else has changed. I don't like to make the excuse, well, you're just getting older. I don't think that's right. I don't like that. So
it's a great question there. That is something I've heard a number of different times from you is, you know, my doctor told me that, you know, this is just part of getting older. And I think for everyone here, there's 36 of you here with us live. I don't think any one of these 36 is okay with that sort of answer. There's always a reason. So thank you for reiterating that, Doc. This is another really interesting question. One, we've actually gotten a few around dry eyes recently. The question is, do you have any suggestions for natural help with dry eyes?
Yeah, you know, I have dry eyes myself. First of all, I would do those, look at what may be causing the dry eyes. If you're staring at a computer all day and not blinking, you know, when you blink, it re-lubricates your eyes. So if you're just staring wide open into your computer, or if you have a fan going in on you, then it can dry your eyes out. Other things, certainly you need to look at your hydration and make sure you're drinking enough water. I like omega-3s. I think that helps a lot. I like vitamin C. That certainly helps a lot. What else do I like? I like warm compresses. I think, and massaging your tear ducts to kind of help drainage. You know, you're trying to, you know, get it moving and not getting those tear ducts clogged up, which you certainly can. Look at your environment. I mean, is your household clean? You may need to humidify the air. The air may be too dry in your house. If you do humidify, make sure it's sterile and you're not spewing fungus all over the place. So I think that's important. Don't get around a lot of perfumes and eye irritants, aerosols in the air. What other things can you do besides drinking? Oh, a good drop really is actually, you can use coconut oil drops. That's a good natural way to coconut and also castor oil. I've heard people do that.
Interesting.
Castor oil and coconut oil eye drops.
Interesting.
You could probably find those at a natural food store, but yeah, you can use those. You know, I've used some, actually, I went to my optometrist, which is a friend, a couple of years ago, and I asked him about my dry eyes, and he actually kind of warmed it up through this new thing he had to kind of help clear out the debris in the tear ducts. And the lashes, wash your lashes too. You know, make sure you soap your lashes down and massage your eyes when you're washing your face. And he actually prescribed me one of the new eye drops. It wasn't Restasis. It starts with an X. I forgot what it was, but it irritated my eyes worse. So those things are expensive. So I'd rather do the natural way, to be honest with you. Unless it's really severe. I mean, if you have really severe dry eyes and other symptoms, you might start looking for some other things that may be causing it, like Sjogren's syndrome and some things where it's actually an autoimmune disease. But for most people, it's your lifestyle. But try those suggestions. It'll probably help you.
Super interesting. Thank you so much for that question over email. This is a question around COPD. Any new help for people with COPD? And I'll kind of preface this. Is it like, what is traditionally help with COPD?
Of course, not smoking, yeah. Getting out of the coal mines, treating your asthma, you know, they're all causes of COPD, being around toxins. So I'm sure the people that have COPD hopefully aren't smoking or working in the coal mines, but asthma is a big cause of COPD, allergies and asthma. There's always something new. There's always a new drug for it, an inhaler. A lot of these inhalers have both the bronchodilators and the inhaled steroids. So, you know, that seems to be the, you know, the gold standard for people with severe COPD or the inhalers. There's also asthma medications like Singulair and all. And of course, oral steroids for exacerbations. You know, my favorite steroid for inhalation, of course, is budesonide. But some of them combine, I think there's three ingredients in the new one. It just depends on how severe it is. There seems like they're always popping up a new drug for COPD. But I'll tell you one, so those are mostly, you know, traditional medications for them, which I'm fine with. But one thing is methylene blue. Mm. I really like methylene blue. I put several people with COPD on methylene blue, and it tends to aerate them. It helps their lungs somewhat. But, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of damage from smoking, which is the most common cause of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And then probably allergies, asthma. You know, always staying away from triggering things, and also diet. I mean, getting the right kind of, make sure you get a good balance of nutrition, avoiding sugar, anything that's inflammatory, avoid it. Mm. Believe it or not, make sure your gut's okay. You know, what you eat affects your COPD a lot. If you're overweight, your COPD is going to be worse. You're going to be more short of breath. But so do anything you can within reason to lose weight. There's methylene blue. There's methylene blue dogs. I flipped that up there. But I was telling somebody today about those dogs when they got in the methylene blue. But yeah, those are some things you can do. And certainly, you know, get some pulmonary function test. And if you have severe COPD, talk with your pulmonologist about some of the new medicines that have come out for it. Some may work for one person, not for another, but the inhaled steroids are kind of the gold standard.
Great question there. Thank you for that, Doc. Steve, I see you. Thanks for being with us tonight. I see that question. We're going to get to that shortly. Gail, I see you over on LinkedIn. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. We're going to get to, we got one more question here, then we're going to get to live questions. This question is around the BRCA2 gene, which we haven't talked about in a minute. So I'm really grateful that this came up because hopefully it helps a few people. What do you suggest for a BRCA2, and I could be pronouncing that wrong, a positive female in late 50s to lose weight? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, the BRCA, you have BRCA 1 and 2 genes, and they're genes that everybody has, male or female, of course, that are really interesting genes. Those genes are really tumor-suppressing genes, and they help to put out proteins that suppress you from getting cancer. But if you have a mutation in either one, you have a 1 and a 2. You get one gene from mom, one from dad. So you have two BRCA1 genes and two BRCA2 genes. And if you get mutations on those genes, like if you have a BRCA1 mutation or a BRCA2 mutation, they both increase your risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer, as well as some other different kinds of cancer. You know, as well, even prostate cancer in men. So usually in BRCA1 is usually a little bit worse than BRCA2. But they're both still, if you have that mutation, especially from both parents, and you know, your chance of getting breast cancer are really high. So they recommend a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy and an oophorectomy. They take your ovaries and fallopian tubes out. And just do a hysterectomy as well. But as far as losing weight, so if you have a lot of breast cancer in your family, in other words, it's great to get tested for that, you know, because down the line you want to know if if you have that for your kids and, you know, for your own prophylactic treatment, whatever you decide to do. But as far as losing weight, I would tell you to do the same thing. You know, BRCA1 is more associated, I think, if I'm right, with triple negative breast cancer, which is usually worse. It's not hormone sensitive. BRCA2 usually is, and it's more common. But as far as losing weight, I would still suggest not much different from what I would tell anybody. You know, start with your diet. What are you eating? You know, it's always, people are different, but I always look at the carbs first and see, because there's a lot of insulin resistance in people. So I say get on a low carb diet, possible to try that, maybe do some intermittent fasting. And there's a lot of tools we have now for weight loss. So check a Cleveland, see where you are on everything, including the hormones, see where your thyroid is, your cortisol, see where your inflammatory markers are, and especially your insulin resistance. And then if you're really insulin resistant, not responding, can't lose weight, tried everything, think about using something like Ozempic, semaglutide, Mounjaro. There's help for people that certainly need it. So it's not a lot different that I would tell you because of that gene to lose weight. You know, certainly we always look at hormones anyway, but, you know, probably not going to put you on hormones. So.
And when he mentioned the Cleveland, he's talking about the Cleveland Heart Panel. We talk a lot about that. Out of curiosity, if there's anybody with us live tonight who's had a Cleveland Heart and got a lot out of it, let us know in the comments kind of what your biggest takeaway was. I'd be super interested. It's one, just because we talk about it all the time, and it's a, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, how do you get kind of introduced into integrative medicine? What should you do? The Cleveland's a great place to start.
Yeah, and if you live in a different city or state, you can certainly, you know, we can mail you an order form to go down to any Quest lab and get what we want on our Cleveland panel. I pick and choose the tests that I want on that. Insurance usually covers most of it. And then we can do a telephone consult with me or one of my colleagues and go over it with you long distance if you don't have that available, because there's a lot of stuff on there, a lot of useful stuff that most doctors just are not going to do.
It's a super helpful test, and thank you to the listener who brought up this question. I hope that answer helped you. I see Motaz is in here. Motaz, what's up? Simrit over on YouTube, I see you. Hobie Resonator Guitars, thank you. Thank you for being here.
What kind of guitar?
Hobie Resonator Guitars. Let's see. We got Katie,
I'd like to
over.
Hear more about those.
Katie's from our Bristol office is in here. It was so good to see you guys a couple weeks ago. I need to head back to Bristol. I just love that office. It's so much. It's beautiful. Katie and Kelsey are incredible. Jill, of course, is amazing. So
send us some information on those Kobe Resonator guitars. That really interests me. Maybe if they make my guitar playing sound better, I'm all for it.
Hobie Resonator Guitars. If you can make Doc sound better on the guitar, like, let us know. A lot of people have said that's impossible. But we're going
to... Probably right.
We're going to keep going to questions, guys. We're to the live portion of the show. Kelsey, what's up? Great to see you. Let's see. We got questions here. I'm going to search for them. If you guys got a question for Doc, go ahead and put in the comments. And I'm going to search here, see where I'm at. We'll start with Coal Miner's Daughter. Kind of goes along with, a little bit with the COPD question. Question is, does pulmonary rehab benefit asthma patients? I know it helps COPD, but what your experience with asthma? Am I wrong in saying that asthma kind of gets flared up this time of year, or is it more spring?
Both. It can be both. It can be year round. But usually you think it's usually worse in spring and fall in this area. But I mean, if you had a lot of mold around and things in your house, it could be worse anytime. But yeah, I think I like pulmonary rehab. I think it definitely helps anybody with either COPD or asthma, chronic bronchitis. Yeah, I'm all for it. You know, usually your local pulmonologist is going to have a clinic that helps people with that, learning how to breathe. You know, I try to breathe through my nose as much as I can when I exercise. It's very hard. It's very hard. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with CO2 retention, your ability to tolerate CO2 as opposed to getting more oxygen, your ability to actually tolerate CO2. I mean, you can train your lungs. Look at these free divers. I mean, they can stay underwater for 9 minutes.
Jeez.
By training. You know, virtually anybody, athletic or not, could learn to hold their breath for 6 minutes. You've got that capacity in you.
It's something that just needs to be trained.
Yeah. Yeah. Free diving is the most dangerous sport there is. A lot of people die doing free diving, you know, because of the changes. When you free dive, I mean, they go a couple hundred feet down and they're down there for a long time. Your lungs shrink up to about the size of a ping pong ball. I mean, it's amazing. I've read several books on it, and it's just fascinating. Phil Knight, owner of Nike's son, died free diving.
Really?
I know we're getting out of it, but yes, I recommend the pulmonary rehab. I think it'd be very helpful.
All right, Cole Myers' daughter. I hope that helps. Brandon, I see your question. Thank you for that. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call here. Okay, we're going to keep moving
Put
here.
Put your personal life on hold. Let's do this. Let's do this Q&A, but first, man, come on.
Everyone knows not to call me right now. I don't know what's going on. Okay, let's keep going. Let's get to my brother Steve's question over here on Facebook. Steve is asking, I took testosterone shots for 8 weeks after having low levels revealed from a blood test. The new blood test showed normal levels on the low side, 220 or so. Would you continue taking shots to raise level further or to raise levels further? Are higher levels good for athletes, or is anything in the normal range going to lead to peak performance? Great question, Steve.
I can't figure out why, if you're taking T shots, it's not higher than that. Make sure that if you're on T shots, make sure you get that level checked 5 to 7 days after your last T shot. I mean, if you wait 2 weeks, it's going to show low again. So, you know, again, I usually start out low. So yes, you need to get higher levels. If you're taking T shots and you're still at 220, you need to be 600, 800 or even higher. Make sure the timing of the blood test in relation to your last shot's right. But yeah, I would definitely go up judge it too by how you feel. If you've been on it for 8 weeks, you should feel better. You know, people generally want higher levels. There's really no normal level. The range is so wide that you want a level that you feel good at. Now, you know, level of 1,000 or so is actually a good level. It's not too high, as long as we're looking at your estradiol level and your hematocrit, which we do. But yeah, I mean, the higher it is, the stronger you're going to be. You know, there is a J curve to that. So you're not going to get, you know, huge peak performance going too high, of course, and you risk other things. But I mean, some of these, you know, bodybuilders take ridiculous amounts of it. You know, we don't do any of that, but so you have to be sensible about it and know what you're doing. But yeah, you need to probably go up on the dose and make sure the timing of that blood test, you know, is good, because, you know, if we can't raise it past 220, we're going to have to transition you, Steve, if you know what I mean. Kidding, Steve.
Steve, we love you. Thank you so much for that question.
Although he would make a good girl. You know, he really would.
I see Dr. Ford is in here. Dr. Ford, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Ford.
I'm not sure if you'll see us in Vegas or not, but you maybe we'll see Andy.
Andy and Fran are going for sure.
You'll see Andy and Fran. So
yeah, I want to set you up with
you'll Andy. Have to talk to my brother. Thank you.
Steve, bring some little dead cakes with you too. No, don't bring them. They're too good. They're bad for you. But
Steve, thank you for that question. Doc, come on, man. No, that was a great.
Steve knows I'm kidding. Steve knows I'm kidding.
Let's go to Gail over on LinkedIn. Thank you, Gail, for hanging out. And I see you got an appointment with Andy in a few weeks. That's awesome. Gail is asking, I'm 49 and just reached status of postmenopausal. Any suggestions on the best recommended type of diet at this point in life to shed weight? Is keto recommended?
You know, I like keto, you know, for periods of time. Virtually nobody can stay on keto. Some people can. You know, I think if I was a cancer patient, I would try to stay in keto forever. But again, a lot of this is opinion. But there's different diets that work for different people. You have to kind of figure out what works for you. And the majority of the times, I like a lower carb diet, higher good fats, and moderately high protein. Most adults don't get enough protein, in my opinion. But it is true that once you reach menopausal age, you know, your metabolism slows down, and it's a little bit harder. Of course, get on bioidentical hormones. Don't ignore the great benefits from everything by getting on bioidentical hormones. That kind of puts you on an even playing field. And again, these bioidentical hormones do not cause cancer or heart disease. And it's a perfect time to get on them. So hopefully you've had them checked and you're getting on some bioidentical hormones. But you know, see what works for you. Look at your insulin resistance. Like I say, you should just get a Cleveland panel and you'd have everything on there you need. Your thyroid may be suboptimal. Your cortisol may be high. Your insulin resistance may be high. And, you know, you're the perfect person we love to work with, because now's the time to do something about it, you know, and start in on that before you lose too much bone mass and increase your risk of heart disease and probably dementia. So, you know, count your macros. One thing you should do too, probably, is if you are around here or anywhere, really, is you can get a hold of a machine called an InBody 570 is the one we have. And, look at your levels of visceral fat, muscle, water retention, basic metabolic rate. That's just a really helpful tool in looking at that. So, you know, keto, you don't have to go all the way to keto, but definitely I like low carb. I just had more luck with low carb on most people, not everybody. And then maybe transition into eating some carbs, good carbs, as you exercise more, because they do give you energy. And all carbs aren't bad. So do that and get evaluated, see where you are. Look at hormone replacement if you're not.
Gail, thank you so much for that question over on LinkedIn. We're going to keep going here over to YouTube with Simrit. Any suggestions for stroke recovery? Super interesting question. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, it just depends on what the cause of it was. Was it ischemia or was it a bleed? Probably ischemia. They're more common, way more common than a bleed. But certainly, this depends on if you have some deficits. Physical therapy is kind of the gold standard for that. But always, too, think about nutrition. Think about exercise. Think about sleep. Do you have sleep apnea? If you do, it increases your risk of both strokes and heart disease. Look at your inflammatory markers and, you know, make sure your gut's working right, that you're not inflaming your body by eating the wrong types of foods or being overweight. You know, being overweight, especially visceral fat, it's just like a an inflammatory machine. It's an organ putting out inflammation, which is bad. So do those things. Keep a positive attitude. Small steps. In a lot of cases, I don't know how bad it is. You know, some of them are pretty bad. But don't ever take no for an answer. Keep working on muscle recovery. You know, some people use electric stimulation for, you know, getting muscles to work again. But it's hard to really give you advice based on what the situation is. But I always do those basics that we just talked about.
All right. Thank you so much for that question, Simran. I hope that helps. We're going to go over to, let's see here, where are we at? Let's get to Roel. Doctor, when I have a long week delivering mail and my heels feel fatigued, should I take anything for this? I'm not on any medication. What's your thoughts on this? We've been, you know, talking a lot of, around, you know, muscle and strength, for somebody who's on their feet a lot.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Feet are so important. And regarding that last question about the stroke, balance. And if you look at my podcast from today, I work with Josh on balance because you want balance. A lot of times you're left after a stroke with your sense of proprioception's really been affected. Maybe even your vestibular system, your eyesight, all those things that are responsible for balance. So look at that. As far as your feet go, feet are so important. People just don't pay enough attention to their feet because that's how you ground yourself. Your feet are connected to the earth. And make sure you have some good orthotics for one thing, because if you're, you know, if you walk as much as you do, you really need to. My grandfather was a letter carrier, and I'm sure he had joint problems too and feet problems. Look at your shoes, look at your orthotics, and at the end of a week, you know, I like curcumin as far as a good anti-inflammatory. I take curcumin daily, which is turmeric. And also, I like ice. I mean, I would use ice daily. Look at the structure. The people that have problems with their feet usually have either a flat feet or a high arch, one or the other. And sometimes it's a signal that your arch may be falling a little bit if you're having a lot of heel pain. Heel spur syndrome, plantar fasciitis are so common, and they tend to get chronic. Matter of fact, I just hired a PA that's been doing podiatry for 8 years, Brittany. I can't wait till she starts with us in a few weeks. She's going to be our foot expert. And
it's such a big deal.
That's really a big deal with feet, how you treat your feet. So do those things and, you know, massage your plantar fascia to break up adhesions. Learn how to stretch your feet out. Do the toe yoga. What do they call that, Ben?
Toga.
Okay.
Toga.
Yeah.
That was interesting. That was really.
It was. I started doing that.
So that's where, Roel, if you don't know, it's where you put your outer four toes on the ground and you lift your big toe up and then you do the opposite. Is that right too? Is that kind of where you put your toe down?
Alternate. Then put your big feet down and raise your four toes.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. I've been kind of doing that as well throughout the day. I think foot strength is a big deal. And I'm seeing here, thank you, Jack. Jack's putting up Hoka shoes, were a game changer. I've heard great things about Hokas. Getting new shoes is, you know, Mark says, like taking care of your feet with shoes, especially somebody, like you, Roa, who's, on your feet, for a large part of the day. So I hope that helps. I'm going to put this up for Moel also. New book recommendation. We always appreciate book recommendations here on the show. This is from Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. It's called Forever Strong. We're going to get this.
We'll get it.
No
get
question it for sure. About it. Thank you, Will. I've actually been watched a few podcast episodes with her. She seems incredible.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going. I think we're to Mark's question here. Question is, last year, 40% of U.S. households were affected by one of these viruses, flu, RSV, and COVID. These viruses led to the highest utilization of the healthcare system. What are your suggestions for prevention and treatments? I'm guessing this is in regards to those three. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah.
From like taking the load off the healthcare system. I think that's where Mark's coming from.
Well, certainly, you know, without getting too controversial, you know, because I think most people know my position on most of the jabs. But what I would do is to make sure your own immune system's very strong. And by that, I mean eating right, exercising, get a good night's sleep, keep stress down, take vitamins. And of course, I like C. I like a great level of D. I like during the flu season, I like NAC. I like quercetin. And those are the big ones. And when you do start coming down with a virus, then make sure you pop your D up to 50,000 a day for 5 days. You could take a vitamin C, a gram every hour till you start feeling better. Take zinc, 50 milligram. Use one of those. And if you come down with COVID, make sure you call our office for the rest of the treatment. You know, again, it seems like the new mutations are a bit less virulent. So we're still seeing some of it, mostly through telemedicine. And in some cases, people still get pretty sick. It can be a bad case of the flu, but it's really not leading to more deaths, you know, in my opinion, or hospitalizations. I'm sure people do go to the hospital more for it, but you just don't see the hospitals getting overwhelmed right now. Knock on wood, hopefully they're not. But, you know, we always have flu outbreaks, and that's what COVID is going to be with us forever. We're going to have outbreaks, new mutations. You know, RSV, we're going to see more of that by hanging around kids. So, you know, it usually doesn't affect adults with a good immune system like it does kids. So unless you're maybe really elderly and immunocompromised, but, so those practical things, you know, certainly hope I don't see you riding your bike with a mask on, Mark. I can't see you doing that. I don't think that's going to help you.
Mark, thank you for that question. Let's get to Brandon's question over here on YouTube. Thank you, Brandon, for being with us tonight. The question is, do you think methylene blue could help slow the progression of white matter disease? And I don't know if I know what I know. I don't know what white
matter is. It's just dementia. It's just a form of dementia. But okay. You know, you have gray matter, white matter in your brain. But yeah, I do. You know, I'm a big believer in methylene blue. It's not going to hurt. I like it. You know, I've put everybody on it that I think's getting, you know, some demyelination or, you know, some dementia. How come that thing goes on there every time we talk about methylene blue? You get a picture of the dogs. It's who's like doing that? Is that you?
It's a, you know, whenever that's mentioned, it automatically pops up.
That must be artificial intelligence doing it's that. Like, yeah, see, we just did it again. I think that's AI because it's not me or you.
It's Siri.
I don't think Jenny's doing that.
It's Siri, you know?
Is it? Yeah. I think we've got AI infiltrating our podcast or our Q&A thing here.
It's ChatGPT. sorry.
Yeah, I'd certainly give it a try. And do all those other things. Read Dr. Bredesen's book on the end of Alzheimer's and look at the whole thing.
You know, that's a book we haven't talked about in too long. And that was, I mean, man, when that book came out, I remember, you know, immediately you sent it out to all of our providers. That book was kind of groundbreaking in many ways. And, you know, obviously, it talks a lot about the stuff that we talk about every week on this show. But yes, I mean, I would suggest anybody read that book. I mean, anybody who's fearful of Alzheimer's, which I'd say, you know, most of us are. So I'm glad you brought up that book. Real quick, guys, we're if you have questions for Doc, we're going to be here for another 10 minutes or so. I'm going to put this up for the people who missed it. There's five slots. It's going to be free for kind of people coming from this community to be with Zach and Josh from TriStar Strength and Rehab. If you go to their website, trying to find where it is over here, TriStarStrengthXRehab.com. You can claim your spot. We'll put a link also in the comments.
They're so knowledgeable and so nice.
Yeah, they're the best.
They're really good.
And, you know, we love their model. We're huge fans of cash only practices. And, even like saying that sounds weird and not patient oriented. But in fact, it's like the most patient oriented thing around is the cash only practice. So we've done interviews with not only them who are cash only PTs, but cash only cardiologists and cash only orthopedic,
endocrinologist, rheumatologist. It's kind of a trend, but there was a great article about that in one of my Medscape articles. I think I might have sent it to you, but that's a really good take on what's happening with our healthcare system because of the system. How we're really more geared towards writing medications than anything. I mean, you get rewarded. This is what's crazy about it. Doctors actually get rewarded by using more medications. And that sounds crazy, but you'll actually, if you're in a traditional system, you'll actually get dinged and they'll withhold bonuses from you if you're on this pay performance plans like most big groups are. If you sit and talk to a person, here's an example. This is crazy, but true. Say you have a new patient. They come in to see you and their cholesterol is 235 and their blood pressure's a little up. And you actually sit down and talk to them about changing their diet up. This has happened. Changing their diet and their lifestyle. It's called lifestyle medicine. That's really what we practice. And you see them back in 2 or 3 months, and their cholesterol is down to 180. Their blood pressure is now 120 over 80. Mm. And their numbers all look better. But here's the thing. Those pay-for-performance plans through the government, they do not look at that. What they track is if you've put them on a statin and if you've put them on a blood pressure medicine. Or diabetes medicine. So in other words, if you've put them on the medicine, no matter what their numbers are now, hopefully they're going to be better. But if you put them on the medicine, you get paid more and your rating will remain like a 5-star rating. But if you don't, and you've actually talked to them, got them with lifestyle, your rating goes down to a 4-star.
That's so interesting.
Is that not just... It's almost criminal. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
But that's how they track it. How many meds? Like I get notifications all the time from insurance companies that even I don't even take insurance that, you know, your patient Sally has diabetes. You know, you need to consider using a statin on her. And if I was participating in this pay per performance model where you get paid big bonuses based on numbers and how many people you put on statins, you get paid more. It's no wonder these doctors don't practice good medicine.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? That's true, though.
Yeah, it's really interesting just to look at where the incentives are. You know, I'd be interested if, you know, patients are aware that this
patients do not know that. Patients do not know it. And, you know, a lot of patients just come in, they just want a medicine anyway.
I wonder if it's
they don't realize what the side effects are going to be.
Right. Right. You know. I do. I see Max got a question here. Jack, we're going to, Linda, we're going to get to those questions. Thank y'all. If y'all have questions for Doc, go ahead and put them in the comments. I wonder if you can look up how a doctor is, how they're paid. Can you ask a doc, like, say I go in, can I say, hey, do you mind me asking if, you know, are you on a pay per performance model? How are you getting reimbursed for
that's
this?
That's a good. I was in a forum not long ago. And this forum was actually held at a medical residency and family practice residents getting ready to get out in the real world and work. They wanted some different practice models out there. So they asked me to come because I have a cash practice. And of course they asked other doctors who are more in the traditional large groups. And this was very telling because one of them said, you know, what I've learned is, as I've come out these few years I've been practicing is that medicine is a business, which is true. But she says, I was pulled aside by our finance committee and they taught me that I just had to make 6 extra clicks on my computer per patient to make our group $3 million more dollars a year.
And all you have to do is just
click. The guts to say that. And you're thinking, I'm sitting there thinking, really? I mean, that just sums it up right there. It's terrible medicine.
Yeah.
Terrible medicine. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. So seek out a practitioner. When you look for a family doctor, you better search far and wide because you're not going to find many like what we do. You're just not going to find it. You can find it, but it's going to be hard. Don't be afraid to ask your doctor or provider questions about the practice model.
Yeah.
You know, or why are you putting me on this? Can I not try eating better, losing weight? You know,
asking why it's such a big deal. I'm going to put this up from Jack. We're going to get to Linda's question as well as Max's. Jack's saying, what's your thoughts on CoQ10 for energy? The reason I put this up is because, you know, for anyone who is on a statin, you always say get on CoQ10. So
yeah, it kind of statins deplete your CoQ10. CoQ10 is responsible for energy. It's responsible for putting out more ATP from your mitochondria. That's a great question. Of course, I love CoQ10, but here's a couple caveats too. As a matter of fact, today was a big day for me because I just received my first shipment of my energy vitamin, which I put together from the Freedom to Formulate guys out in Oregon. So, of course, I have CoQ10 in there, but I also have PQQ. You really need PQQ with CoQ10. What PQQ does is stimulate the formation of new mitochondria. Read about mitochondrial health, but which I already had in there with my CoQ10, but I added taurine in there. And so I've got taurine, PQQ, CoQ10, all in my energy vitamin for about what most CoQ10 people sell it for. So it's a triple threat. I love it. And it just came out today. Taurine, read about taurine. It's great for longevity. It's the only good thing in a Red Bull, so it does give you energy. But a lot of new studies about how it lengthens lifespans by about 30% in mice, and they're doing human trials now. So I love my new energy formula.
Now, if they don't have access to the energy formula, we will eventually get them up online.
We're gonna be providing these vitamins online. We're getting all kinds of questions because what I'm trying to do, and if you listen to my podcast from last week, is make combination vitamins that are without fillers, they're dated, they're quality, they're affordable, and you don't have to take so many. You just take like this one energy formula has all 3 in there.
There's the so episode.
I'm
right
pumped
there.
Up about it. I really am.
Yeah, it is. It is super cool, and you know, we have gotten quite a few questions, and we will get that online, those vitamins. In the time being, would you say just take CoQ10 with PQQ? Is that how you
would go? Okay. CoQ10 by itself, if you just, that's all you can get.
Okay.
But look at the other stuff too.
Okay. And Elise, I did not see your vitamin D questions. So can you put that back in, your question on vitamin D? We'll make sure we get to that. Let's get to Max here. Have acid reflux and doctor gave Pepcid. It's been a whole week. I've been taking it and still having pain at night when I go to bed. What else should I take or do? What's your thoughts on this?
You know, Pepcid's a very mild H2 blocker. What you might do to just to prove if it is reflux causing that pain at night, again, don't ignore chest pain. I mean, make sure you're up to date on your cardiac calcium scorings to make sure it's not anything else. Make sure you have the head of the bed up. You don't eat or drink anything before you go to bed. And you might even, just as an experiment, just for a few nights, get on Nexium or Prilosec, Meprazole, just to see. It's a much more potent PPI. It's going to cut all the acid out of your stomach. If it cures it, you know you have reflux, and you can go looking at other causes of it. I don't like you to be on a PPI more than a couple weeks, because you do need some acid in there. And again, there's always a question, is there really not enough, or is too much acid or not enough acid? So then sometimes I do this thing called a betaine test. But so look at that. I mean, look at your lifestyle, do the other stuff. But I would just over-the-counter Nexium or Prilosec, see if that works. If it does work, then you probably have too much acid. You need to think about looking at your diet and not eating before bed, elevating the head. You may have a hiatal hernia, which probably 50% of us have. So look at those things. I think stress causes reflux too.
Yeah, no question.
I really do.
Max, thank you for that. We're going to get these methylene blue questions real quick. For Linda, where can I get methylene blue? We've been recommending one. It's on Amazon. We'll put that in the comments tonight. You're on Facebook. I'll make sure it gets seen on Facebook. It's just make sure it's pharmaceutical grade is kind of the big thing.
There's a company. It's not expensive at all. You can order it directly from Amazon. You know, since we did that podcast on methylene blue, that is by far our most watched video, isn't it?
Yeah, no question. For Cindy here, is it better to take methylene blue in the AM? I take so much in the AM, would like to spread it out. What's your thoughts on this?
You can take it in the mornings when I usually take it, but just don't take it at night because it is active. I mean, it'll wake you up. It makes you think better. I wouldn't take it at night because, you know, it just wakes you up a little bit. You know, if you're ever in a car and you're really tired, you fall asleep, long drive, I've done this, take some methylene blue, and it's amazing.
I'm
like
seeing this.
Adderall.
Thank you, Katie, for this. I think you guys can click that if you're on. Look at Katie's comment on Facebook. You should be able to click it. So thank you for that, Katie. That's the methylene blue link we've been sending people. Let's see here. Let's go to Elise. My vitamin D levels were 150 and all my numbers were excellent. My doctor, who I no longer trust, freaked out. How high is too high when calcium and all other metabolic numbers are good? So I'm assuming this is in regards to the D level. I know you say, you know, 60 to 80 is kind of the sweet spot for vitamin D levels. What's your thoughts on this?
100, yeah, that's a little high. And the only reason I tell you that you might want to lower how much supplement you're taking is just because you can predispose you to kidney stones, whether you have a normal calcium or not. And again, you don't need any extra calcium. I had a patient today that told me, you have a good calcium recommendation? I go, no, do not take extra calcium. And there are some caveats to that. Say you had, you know, have no parathyroid action. That's different. But for most people, you do not need to take an extra calcium. Take your D with K. But yeah, I don't know how much D you're taking, but I'd probably slack off a little bit on that level just because of the increased risk of kidney stones. It's my own opinion on it.
All right, Elise, I hope that helps. Go back to Linda's question here. Would it bother you if you have heart trouble, this is in regards to methylene blue. Any thoughts around heart trouble with methylene blue?
No, you know, I don't, you know, if you read the literature, you know, you might say, well, it's an MAO inhibitor. It's a nitric oxide antagonist, which it is, but I just don't see problems with it. You're not going to take enough of it really to bother you. And some people say, well, if you're on an SSRI, you shouldn't take it. But I haven't found it to be a problem at all with that. And if you listen to, there's a PhD who has been studying methylene blue for like 30 years. I forget his name, but he's at a University of Texas. And you, if you Google it, you can listen to a lot of his very long podcast and sort through it. But I don't think it'll bother you. I think it'll probably help you. You get more oxygenation for sure.
I'm gonna look up his name real quick because I think that'd really help people.
That's a good question because a lot of people think, well, you know, if it's a nitric oxide inhibitor, you know, does it make sense when I want more vasodilation to my arteries like you get when you take L-arginine, L-citrulline? Doesn't really work that way.
I'm not seeing his name. We'll probably bring that up on next week's show. Real quick, while people are here, next week we're going to do it on Monday instead of Tuesday. Tuesday's Halloween.
That's right.
So,
we'll be out trick or treating, right?
The live show will be Monday instead of Tuesday next week. I'm really glad that I'm bringing this up now.
I am too. I'm glad you're doing that.
Golf House is saying, what is a PQ? Is this for us, Golf House? Is there a PQQ level?
I've never checked a PQQ level. We check CoQ10 levels CoQ10. On all our Clevelands, but so I've never checked a PQQ level.
And I am seeing, I see Jack is asking when we can get him online, Golf House. What we're doing, and I'm going to talk with Katie about this, it's going to be post Black Friday. But we're anticipating this year. We'll keep you posted. I don't want to promise anything because we're in the process of trying to figure it all out. But it will not be before Black Friday. It will hopefully be soon after. There is Ike right there. And then we got Izzy trying to probably take Ike's spot. Guys, y'all have been the best. Did I get to everything? Max, did we help you out there? I see you put a comment there. I think we got Elise is saying her kidney numbers are good and slacked off on D. Okay.
Right.
Sounds good there. What's up, Izzy? Guys, we love you. Thank y'all for hanging out with us tonight. We do this show every single week. It is on Tuesday, 7 to 8, except for next week. So next week we're going to be Monday. Tuesday is Halloween. We'll be doing the show Monday. And I believe that day is the 30th. The 30th of October will be the next show. Again, y'all make this show so much fun. Y'all make it great. The questions, help us, helps you, helps everyone in here. I hope you guys enjoyed it tonight. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Deborah. Carter, Katie, thank you guys so much. I love you. Katie, Kelsey, over in the whole Bristol fam, thank you all for hanging out. Sherry, thank you. Cherry, thank you. And Doc, are you going back out on the bike?
No, I'm just going to try to use my Theragun.
I wonder if we should do a show with you doing this the entire time and see, like, honestly, I think it'd be a great show. Your answers.
You do?
Your answers might be great.
Yeah. I love this there. Man, have a good week, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, man. Love you. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.